What's up, everybody? I'm JJ John Jastrzemski.
And I'm Jason Goff. And if you haven't heard, The Ringer has gone local.
I'm bringing the fire. I'm bringing the rain from the Big Apple with my show, New York, New York.
And I'm repping Chi-Town with my new show, The Full Goal, on all things Chicago.
We've got episodes 3 nights a week with all the reaction to the local teams and guests.
Plus bonus episodes around all the big games and storylines.
So whether you're uptown, downtown, in the burbs, or a transplant,
make sure you follow New York, New York, and The Full Goal on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Ringer NBA show presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ringer NBA show. It's The Answer. I'm Chris Ryan. I'm joined as always by Sirit Sohi. What's up, Sirit?
What's up, Chris?
Today we're talking about the Suns and the Warriors, who played obviously on Tuesday night in one of the sort of minor classics of this NBA season as we get to the quarter point. And they are playing again on Friday night. So we're recording this on Thursday afternoon. Assuming that the Suns beat the Pistons tonight, they will have won 18 in a row and what Devin Booker has termed no loss November as it bleeds into December. And yeah, it's very exciting. You know, as many people probably already know, that game on Tuesday was the first time in the history of the league that two teams from the same division played each other with 850 or higher winning percentages after at least 20 games. That's a long way from Elias Sports Bureau of saying these were two really, really good teams playing at the height of their powers. It was a classic on Tuesday. I'm really looking forward to the return match. It's not really, I can't remember the last time we've had two of these games in a week between the two top teams in the league. Can you?
No, I think like what the Elias stat is trying to get at is that like this was kind of a playoff atmosphere.
Yeah.
It was just like, first of all, both teams really wanted to win. It was, I wouldn't really necessarily call it a slugfest as much as it was just like, you know, like really precise defense on both sides. Like both teams seemed like they really knew each other really well. And the Warriors were also, I mean, this was something that really caught me off guard. The Warriors were really upset about losing this game.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was something that like, even at the height of like, you know, their 72 win run, they just didn't really seem to care when, you know, like when the game was already kind of over, you wouldn't see them be like totally completely frustrated. Like I think the one game it ever was like the one where the Klay Thompson meme emerged because it was like the first time ever that he looked upset about something. I can't remember what the game was, but like, yes, both teams really, really cared. And yeah, I think it was the best game of the season. And I think we might have gotten like the best game of the season early. Because I guess like Booker's not going to play in tonight's matchup. It'll still be a good game. But yeah, this was exciting.
Yeah, an instant classic. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. If you want to call this a rivalry or if you want to just look at this as a matchup, my big takeaway watching this, and I completely agree with you, is like it was like the pinch me rivalry. Like, pinch me, this is really happening. I'm not dreaming. Like, and I think for both teams, there's an element to that. Like, mm-hmm. For the Warriors, they have now returned to prominence after a couple of years in the wilderness after KD and with all the injury-ravaged seasons that they had and maybe some of the questionable personnel moves, the Oubre Jr. era, etc. And for the Suns, you know, like, if you can go to the finals and still be a nobody-believes-in-us team, they are that. You know what I mean? Like, where, mm-hmm. where I think that there was probably some cynicism. While it was like a feel-good story, it was a, there was some cynicism about, like, yeah, well, if AD plays, like, are the Suns really going to the finals if AD is healthy in the playoffs, right? Like, from last year. Like, there is a little... You think so?
Yeah, I think
so. You think that the Suns could have beaten the Lakers if they had had AD healthy last year?
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason, like, the Lakers were a seventh seed, and I think, like, some of the problems that they had really had nothing to do with AD, honestly. Like, there were rotation... we don't have to get into the Lakers, yeah, I mean, I just, like, you know, there were rotation decisions in the playoffs that, you know, like, that Vogel made that made zero sense, and they couldn't shoot. That had nothing to do with AD. I mean, I guess he could have created more spacing, but they were getting wide-open shots. Like, that team had all the, like, makings of the problems that this Lakers team has. This one is a little bit more explosive.
Yeah.
But
you mean the problems are more explosive or the team is more explosive?
The problems feel a little bit more explosive, even like on the court, yes. You know, as far as explosive problems go. I mean, I don't know that Westbrook is, you know, that should be like the dictionary definition. But yeah, no, let's get back to this.
So I was just, I mean, that was a long way of saying that I think that if you had told me even before the season or like even after the finals last season that in like late November, we were going to be watching the two best teams in the league square off against one another and it was going to be Phoenix and Golden State and they would just be far and away, both in terms of the advanced metrics and record and eye test and just vibe check, the stories of the season would be these runaway teams. I would have been like, I don't know. It's going to take a little while. They're waiting for Klay to get back. The whole Warriors thing is stay afloat until they get Klay or maybe make a trade in the midseason. And the Suns, you know, they just played a long season. And can Chris Paul stand up? And they didn't pay Ayton. And the Sarver thing, it's going to have a cloud around the whole team for the whole season. And despite all those things, these teams are the elite of the league. I thought we could get into some of the stuff that we saw on Tuesday, some of the stuff that we're looking forward to on Friday. But big picture, I mean, I know that you probably aren't going to like be like, and now I know this that I didn't know the day before. But did you leave that game with any huge takeaways that you want to share?
I think because of the playoff environment, because of the care factor of both teams and just some of the adjustments that we saw throughout the game, which we can get into, there are some takeaways. I think the biggest one just being that the Warriors are actually going to have a real challenge with this team. Every single thing we say about this obviously comes with a caveat that Klay wasn't playing and Iguodala also. I thought Iguodala could have had like an outsized impact on this game and really could in a series. Like, I feel like he's kind of like one of the better Chris Paul neutralizers or like Chris Paul understanders out there. But yeah, like let's start there. I thought Chris Paul just really like picked apart the Warriors in this way, like, and it reminded, like, what you said about pinch me rivalry, like, I really felt that because like I just felt like all of the years that Chris Paul has like struggled against this team has like almost been there and is now like kind of cleaned up a few things that I think he needed to clean up in order to like beat a team like the Warriors, whether that's like just off the court with, you know, the way he, you know, handled his teammates and everything, or even just like relinquishing some things on the court, becoming more of like a score first player. And this team too is in his sort of image. But yeah, like it was really almost nice to watch him pick apart the Warriors because I don't know, I don't really even know what I'm getting at, except for like I had this moment where like for the first time in my life, I really felt myself like rooting for Chris Paul against a team like the Warriors.
Yeah.
Well, at least like against a team like the Warriors, like I've started to have like a soft feeling towards Chris Paul. I was like, man, like this guy has been like, he should get a ring.
Yeah.
He should just get a ring. That's just what I was feeling. Like, I just feel like I think my biggest realization was like emotional investment in Chris Paul for the first time in my life.
That makes personally. Total sense. I yeah, think that for yeah. the last, this last like post Clippers part of Chris Paul's career, there's always been a clock ticking. whether it is the clock that ticks with his him wearing out his welcome at a place, whether it's because he, you know, there is like a finite amount of time. I feel like guys like to play with Chris Paul at a point, and then there comes a point where they're like, this is just, I can't get yelled at for not rotating or making a cut or doing whatever. Or it's like, yeah, you know, like whether, you know, we can't pay Chris Paul again at this age, so we need to move him on. And that's sort of what happened with the Houston, Oklahoma, and then Phoenix situations. So there's been a feeling of like he's got like a, he's like transient, like he's going to be moving through the league. Mm-hmm. And now he gets to Phoenix, like you said, a team very much built in his own image. He's obviously sharing a brain with Monty Williams. And then we underrate the fact that, you know, he comes from Oklahoma City, he goes to Phoenix, they make it to the finals. It seems like it was all, you know, in the stars. But this is like their, I feel like this is almost like their first real season together. And you can see some of the continuity paying off. There's a play on Tuesday at the end of the second half where he finds, Ayton's essentially being triple covered. He's got Curry and Wiggins kind of draped on his back, and Draymond is fronting him but kind of sagging. He's also cheating out towards Chris Paul, who's out on the wing. And Chris Paul just fires like a hip pass through two guys to Ayton, who dunks it. And you're just like, well, I don't know if he would have made that pass last year. I'm sure there are examples of him doing that, but there felt like, it felt like there was almost like, we have been playing this Jazz for a little while now, and I know when you're going to go and I know when I'm going to stop.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's what it is. I think it's like, it's kind of the same feeling you get watching the Warriors, like not as exciting, but it's nice to see somebody thrive doing exactly what they were designed to do. Like, he has figured out, like, you know, like a pass like that, he's figured out his teammates. And now they're just kind of finding like the next gear of their chemistry. And all the players that were like learning to, you know, play not necessarily completely in his image, but, you know, like I think the way that the Phoenix offense is tailored, like definitely suits a player like Chris Paul, like just, you know, like how pick and roll heavy it is. So now naturally, like you have players like Miles Bridges who are starting to run their pick and roll more because like that's how you're going to grow within this offense. And it's just like, it's built in the same style as, it's built with like the same intention in mind, I think, actually, as Steph and the Warriors, where you pair a team and a system and like the personnel in order to like basically like take on the entire identity of the best player.
Right.
So like, you know, with the Warriors, it's like you have like the Draymond side of it, of like just a bunch of really physical guys, good screeners, that'll switch and defend. And then like, you know, you've got like the emergence of Jordan Poole on the other end, who's like learning to play a little bit more like Steph and Klay. And it's just, that was probably like what was so fun about watching this game, because it was like two completely different styles that, first of all, like the Suns really just got the Warriors out of theirs, but they're uniquely theirs, and like they've both just hit this point of mastery where, like, you know, like the Warriors can go into a triangle and two when sure, they want to, and the Suns like can just get into a zone and like just muck things up in the perimeter for the Warriors. And yeah, it was just, I mean, it was like a kind of like really ugly symphony.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost in some ways, I thought it felt like watching really great football where coaches are taking away the other team's favorite player, like that they are trying to neutralize. Like, you could just see that entire game, and I'll be so fascinated to see what the difference is between playing in Phoenix and playing in the Bay. You could see Ayton and Bridges just blowing up that Draymond Steph pick and roll over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not blowing it up, at least like making it as uncomfortable as I've ever seen anyone make it. And whether that was like Monty Williams's like grand design in the first place or not, it was just like, okay, so we've eliminated this. Now it's going to be up to Otto Porter and Andrew Wiggins and Jordan Poole to beat us. And Jordan Poole did his best in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it was really like, once Steph is kind of taken out of things on the offensive side, the Warriors are still probably that clay-shaped figure away from mm-hmm. being like the like odds-on title favorites. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's what kind of, this was the first time this season that I thought, oh, like they're gonna need Klay.
Yeah, and Alex and Wiggins had back spasms, I know, and like we mm-hmm. can do the whole like bean counter thing where it's like, well, Booker was out, but then Wiggins was hurt, but Klay wasn't there, but this, but that, but you know, I mm-hmm. sorry, go ahead. I just wanted to point that out.
I think there's actually some, even though he had the spasms, I think there is like a kernel of insight into his struggles, because I think what the Suns did really well, because they took away the Curry-Draymond pick and roll, was that they forced the young players to make decisions against like a defense that wasn't tilted. And then it just became like Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins in the pick and roll trying to trick a guy like Ayton.
Yeah.
Which is just not going to happen. So you had like a lot of, you had some pull-up jumpers, and like, you know, Poole is still, he is still, even, you know, it doesn't have to be the Suns, he's still in a place where he's figuring out his game, and he's making some like over-aggressive decisions sometimes, under-aggressive decisions sometimes. And that exposed like another one of the Warriors, I guess, not weaknesses, but yeah, it is a weakness in that, like, you know, these young guys, they still aren't all the way there.
Sure.
Like, it's worked out because it, like, they're still really good, and like, you know, I have some faith that they'll get there by the end of the season, but they still have to get there.
Yeah.
And they still have to get Klay back, and like, you know, a guy like Iguodala still has to be healthy. And those were the ifs that, like, I was starting to feel more like questions again.
Yes.
And like, we had this moment where we were caught up in like the Warriors' inevitability almost. And I still feel like they'll figure most of those things out. But like, this team can actually beat them.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Did you feel like watching Ayton? Because I wanted to get into the Ayton part. Was that a testament to Ayton, which I think it was, and it could be both things. But was it a testament to Ayton, or was it, hey, the Warriors are thin up front, and like, this is what happens when you've got a really determined, really skilled big man who's getting basically like Basketball Hall of Fame level service in the post, and he's like getting to the rim at will, he's cleaning up on the boards, all this stuff. Like, did you feel like that was all Ayton, or did you feel like that was a flaw basically in the Warriors construction, where it's like, it's essentially Draymond and that's it down low?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I think Looney has like really emerged as somebody who can handle a lot of the bigger matchups this season. You know, it felt like he's always been really great on switches against stronger players, but there were a couple this season where like you kind of thought like, okay, he's going to struggle, or the Warriors are going to struggle down low. And he's really like up the physicality. But I think this was kind of always going to be a fundamental issue with the Warriors. But it's an issue that most teams have. Like, Ayton kills everyone. And like, you know, they struggle with Jokic, who's another guy who's going to do that to everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, to me, that's just like kind of a reality of playing the Suns. Like, you know, in last year's playoffs, Ayton did not get shut down until the finals, until it was Brook Lopez and Giannis and attrition and like having to handle those guys on the other side. And just like, you know, one of the most physical defenses I've seen in a really long time. So that's just, you know, that just is what it is. Like, he's going to be really patient in the post. Like, he knows he has a size advantage. He knows he has a touch advantage. Like, he is deceptively strong, and like, you know, he's really athletic and energetic, and he's a menace on the boards. And like, I think like the biggest thing is like, and we learned about this about Ayton in the playoffs, but like, he matches physicality. Like, they are not going to punk him. It's not going to be a situation where like, you know, Ayton looks like a skinny 7-footer, and like, you know, Draymond can get into his head, and like, he'll get frustrated, and like, you know, I'm sure those moments will happen over the course of a 7-game series, but like, for the most part, this has been a guy where when he gets challenged physically, like, he ups the ante himself.
Yeah. You know, I suppose there were some questions about, you know, when he didn't get paid at the beginning of the season, whether or not his focus was going to be there. And if anything, I think he looks even better than he did in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's like an all-time ego death, by the way, for this guy. No, really, like, number one pick. And then like the whole, he gets like 2010 all year, but all he has to hear about is how like,
he's not,
you know,
Luka.
There were two guys. Yeah. He's not Luka. He's not Trey. The Suns are going to regret it forever. Like the Igor stuff, like they should have taken Doncic. Why didn't they take him? And then like, he has to just like, within that, has to like, just stop, you know, trying to score, because the Suns need him to turn into like a defensive god, and he does it, which is like, you know, a testament to skill, but also like, well, and then he doesn't get paid.
Yeah. And he's not out there on the perimeter. Like, when we were watching him on Tuesday night, that's not like, I mean, I don't know. He's guarding Steph out on the perimeter. When they switch that and Bridges takes Draymond, and then DeAndre Ayton is essentially in charge of one of the greatest scorers in the NBA history.
Mm-hmm.
And Steph had an off night, but Steph was also, like a lot of people have pointed out, Steph was getting rushed by rangy long defenders in a way mm-hmm. that very few other teams can send against him. Did you think that are Bridges and Ayton so unique in their defensive qualities that there is no blueprint to that? That's just talent versus talent. Or did you think that there was any, hey, you can blow that Draymond Steph pick and roll up, like you can get into Steph's comfort zone a little bit with a guy like Ayton? Did you think that there's anything to learn if you're like a Vogel, if you're an opposing coach looking to game plan against the Warriors? Because like that one thing I will say about this game, and you said, you know, it felt like a playoff game afterwards. It did. A lot of the quotes coming from Steph, from Kerr, from Monty, from a lot of the people involved in the game were like, it almost felt like there was so much film prep. It felt like game four or five of a series where they were like, well, we knew they were going to do this, so we were going to do this. And then they were going to countermeasure our countermeasure. It seemed so strategic.
It gave me, like, to the point of the defense on Steph, like, it gave me kind of vibes of like, the Thunder just using a bunch of size and physicality in 2016 in the playoffs against Steph. You know, just like a guy like Roberson who can really bother him. Like this isn't, you know, there are situations where Steph has trouble and then it's fine. And like, you know, that could happen. Like he could just come out tomorrow and it's like, you know, he just drops 40 on them. Like yeah. I think with Steph, it's like they definitely got him out of his comfort zone, but throughout the course of a series and as he gets like more shots at a team, like he hasn't had a lot of reps against like this new contender, right? Like he finds a new comfort zone and he tends to like solve most defenses throughout the course of a series. But at the same time, like this is not like Matthew Dellavedova,
sure.
right? Like this is like they have like they figured out a way to like it was like to me the thing that was most troubling about Steph's performance was not the fact that he was 4-for-21. It was that he was minus 17.
Yeah.
He has not been that low this season.
As a podcast, we should get super into single game plus minus.
Yeah, no,
just like that's the single most important statistic.
I'm on one right now.
Should we zag back to single game plus minus?
12 points, 4-for-21 field goal percentage.
these are the numbers that matter. Single game plus minus field goal percentage.
Exactly. I did check his net rating. It was a negative 21. But most of the time when Steph has a bad game or if you take him out of the offense, like the Warriors find a way to neutralize that, and he ends up having like a pretty good plus minus, whether it's like, you know, over the course of a season or in a single game. And that is something where, like, I think, you know, when you get Clay back, like, you know, they shaded off of him, like, you know, off of Gary Payton, or I think mm-hmm. like, you know, even at times Jordan Poole, who, you know, ended up running quite a lot of this game. You know, if that's Clay in that situation, like that's just going to look different. Like you might not even necessarily be able to use that scheme. But in general, I think that like what the Suns did really well was that they didn't cheat. They switched smart and they didn't let him cut back door. Like that's usually the key with Curry. Like when he's being defended by like players that are denying him the ball, like which Mikhail was, is that he can just cut back door on them. But Mikhail is like, he's really long and he's really smart and he's really fast, so he can keep up with him. And they were really trying to too, and like Cam Johnson kind of has similar characteristics. And then like in the like I think in the second half, they were just kind of like, there was really good communication where for the most part, Ayton and Mikhail weren't switching the pick and roll on Steph. But in the instances where they couldn't, Ayton would just hightail it from like the low post. Like first, just really impressive his speed and control, and you know, give Steph issues. And that was like those two for the whole game were like kind of the main factors. But the thing that was interesting to me too was just that like it was all kind of interchangeable as well, mm-hmm. where like multiple defenders kind of got a shot at him and multiple defenders kind of got like a shot at you know, being like being the help too. But yeah, I just thought it was really smart, you know, like just take the ball out of his hands and like make the rest of the guys beat you. Like that's usually like, you know, it's usually just not like that easy of a bargain though. So like that's where the Clay factor and like the improvement of the young guys comes in.
It was a Wiggins litmus game too, because I think if you wanted to be at all cynical about the Warriors start, which I'm not, I'm a true believer. I think they look like the best basketball team in league this season, but they've played some cupcakes. Like they have not had like the strongest strength of schedule. I think that they've gotten to play the Thunder a few times, the Rockets a few times, and like, you know, the games that they've had so far has not been like a gauntlet. And I would say the same thing Phoenix's run that they've been on. I mean, they've done it. It's a really impressive one, and like they're starting to get up into close to 20 games unbeaten. You start to talk about this team being like not just good this season, but historically good. But I was kind of thinking with Wiggins, you just want to see it in the biggest moment, right? You want to see that 30-point outburst in like a moment where they need it to happen.
And it's like not about his personal revenge.
Right. Exactly. Like it's like, or they need to somehow get him traded from every single team in the league so that he can have that motivation. Did you notice anything from Wiggins' game here that gave you pause? It made you concerned at all? Or did you just feel like this was one of those nights where he got erased a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to come up against the limits of like his decision-making ability, I guess, right? And that's, you know, we'll see where he goes from there. He could continue to grow, but, you know, I think somebody who can keep up with him like Ayton can is just going to like be incentivized to give him the shot every time. And I think from there, it just becomes a matter of like, can Wiggins attack Ayton like that? Should he? And like the answer with him tends to just be like sometimes, you know, like that's just how it goes. But I think one of the issues was just that he was put in a position to make decisions, and that's where I think that they really missed Iguodala, because like he's kind of like the essentially like the point guard for the second unit. And while like the second unit made runs in the second and fourth without Steph, it was mostly defense oriented, and they just kind of looked like, for the most part, in their half court offense, like they looked really ugly. So yeah, I think it's just getting Iguodala back would kind of change. Like, it kind of just shows you how important he is, I guess.
I thought the Booker absence was like really notable, yeah, because that's supposed to be the gut punch. We give up a 9-0 run, or, you know, maybe it was almost good that it happened towards the end of the second quarter so that they could go into the locker room and kind of take stock, mm-hmm, and realize this guy just did his hamstrings, so he's probably not coming back out. But I've seen other teams lose a player that just winds up sucking the air out of the building. And like, it wasn't like they didn't miss a step, but they certainly did not ever look like they were intimidated after Booker's loss, like the absence of Booker. It's been a different kind of season for the Suns this year, because I almost think because the finals, I've been taught to like look at this team more holistically than just, mm-hmm, as like Booker has a better backcourt partner and now is like that it's still his team. It feels like a very classically great NBA team. We've talked about this before, about how these guys all sort of fit different platonic ideals of their position. They do things in a very specialist kind of way. How big of a, I mean, like, can you quantify the absence of Booker if he's gone for 10 days, 2 weeks? Like, do you think that this team misses that big of a step?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I feel like as long as it's not a major injury, I'm kind of with you where I look at it a little bit more holistically. Like, I don't really, as you know, to me, it's like you guys are already 18-3. If you lose every game with Booker out, I don't care. I really don't. Like, who gives a shit, yeah, honestly? Like give a bunch of touches to Mikal Bridges and Cam, and let's see what Ayton looks like in the post without Booker's gravity. Like, you know, I think it's they're a team where everything's an opportunity. Like, they're not really in a position where any of this really matters. Everything's gravy from here, you know. It's December.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident. It was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visible Wireless. Don't miss the premiere of your new wireless savings with Visible. It's time to switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. That's no hidden fees. No, really. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
At Walt Disney World Resort, magic is found in spontaneity. The unplanned, the unexpected, an inside joke born in the Haunted Mansion queue. A surprise Stitch sighting in Tomorrowland, watching fireworks from your room. These memories aren't made from predetermined plans, but manifested from simply being present and together in the most magical place. Find your moment at Walt Disney World Resort.
Something interesting is happening on Friday. And, you know, we've obviously talked about Tuesday night's game extensively here. It's still hanging with us. I wanted to, like, there are other games from this week that I found intoxicating. Mm-hmm. Like, the Bucks-Hornets game was amazing. And there have been other really cool moments. I just thought that Sixers-Celtics game was just, like, so aesthetically pleasing, you know, just even as a neutral, you know, but also just, like, so heartwarming to see where those two franchises are. But... you know, we have this Friday night clash between the Warriors and the Suns that ESPN flexed into the national game, taking the two LA, the battle for LA mm-hmm. out of the spot. I honestly did not know that the NBA did this, especially this early in the season, which if this is a possibility, I would ask, mm-hmm. like, can we just do, and with all due respect to Brandon Ingram, like, any non-Zion Pelicans games, can we get out of national television for the sake of humanity?
Yeah, I actually did a rating story about this last year, and they have started to flex out games. Like, they've been doing it since last season, I think.
Was it like a pandemic thing, like a kind of a wrinkle that happened after that, or was it just they've just started getting a little bit more creative?
I don't know the reason. I imagine it is just like they realized that there was a natural problem with like the load management. And, you know, sometimes you predict that one team's going to be really good. And then like, it just like, it makes it a little bit different. Like I was, my kind of premise with it was that the schedule kind of makes it hard for like stories, new storylines to emerge mm-hmm. because the surprise team just doesn't get on national TV. But yeah, so that's something that they started to do, but it's like it's also something that's a little bit more difficult than say like, you know, like the NFL does it all the time. And I think I can't remember exactly why, but I think it's just something with like the logistics of it. But they're basically like they're doing it more and they're trying to do it more.
Right.
Yeah.
And I thought that was you know, there's nothing, I'm sure the Lakers Clippers game will be like fascinating in its own right, but there is a real like of the moment urgency to Warriors Suns, and it reminded me like when mm-hmm. I was watching Warriors Nets a couple of weeks ago, which I think even going into it, while there was all those storylines with Durant facing his former team and the Nets kind of trying to, you know, the Nets are like the worst best team where they're like they're just comfortably at the top of the Eastern Conference, but I feel like if you only based it on like what people said about the Nets, you'd think they were at 500. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? But watching that game, and it was like kind of apparent pretty early on that the Nets were like, we'll take a mulligan on this mm-hmm. one. And that is like the death knell. Like, I don't think the NBA can really tolerate those kinds of games for that much longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they can't control what happens, but they can kind of, if they've got a good thing like they do here with the Suns and the Warriors, I think it's like really right for them to kind of put it out front and center as much as they can.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, they have to, right? Like, this is Steph being back has just been, or the Warriors being back have been like a ratings boost for the NBA. There's like a thing that came out, I think like two weeks ago about the Warriors. I think they were like the top viewed game, like 3 out of 5 or something like that. And like, you know, we know this, you don't even like, you don't need evidence to to know that people flock to Steph Curry. We're aware of this. Right. But yeah, like I think it's great because I think it just allows these things to like naturally emerge. Like this can now kind of like, it's not a rivalry yet, but when you get like a 2-game series where like, you know, there's going to be adjustments, like they probably, like the Warriors were really upset about losing. I think they probably will really want to win on Friday.
I think they'll tag them on Friday, and that's why it's that much cooler that they're playing on Christmas.
Yeah.
Because they play the rubber match on Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get, like, you kind of have 3 marquee matchups already, and then, like, you hopefully get a playoff series, but if you get one, you already have, like, a little bit of a baseline to work off
Which
of.
Is the thing that the league needs. Like, that's, like, I was even watching last night, you know, with the Hornets and the Bucks. And speaking of pinch me, I was just like, this is like LaMelo is going to will these guys to win. This is pretty amazing. But I was like, I really would love to see a Bucks Hornets, like whether it's a first round series, like that would be incredible. Like if they all go into that relatively healthy, I was like, the league needs more like naturally occurring rivalries or like matchups like this.
I love the idea of LaMelo Ball's like, final boss to get to an NBA championship being Giannis.
Yeah. I don't know if he's gone through enough levels yet if we're talking in terms of video games.
You know, well, yeah, every great player has, well, not everyone, but like, you know, there's a lot of great players that have the guy that they couldn't figure out for a really long time. And I think LaMelo and Giannis just present like such a wonderful contrast to each other.
It was also just like LaMelo just didn't, like the thing, and this that you saw this a lot with players in the Suns Warriors game, but like LaMelo didn't know any better than to be scared or to be intimidated by the fact that they was playing against the champs. You know, like it was just like I'm gonna take this game to them like every single time down the floor, and there was really nothing they could do because if they closed out on him, he was just throwing these like absolutely telepathic passes.
LaMelo not really being an NBA fan turning out to be like the best thing for his NBA career is just like is so good.
Yeah, the Bucks, I'm not familiar with their work. Do you want to do a prediction that will be saved for time in memoriam on this podcast for Friday night's Warriors Suns clash?
Sure, yeah, let's do it.
Okay, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Steph's going to have a better game. No Booker. I think the Warriors will win.
I think Golden State, because the Phoenix will be coming off a Detroit game. They won't have Booker. I think that there will be a little edge to the Warriors, and I think we'd set us up for a really, really good Christmas Day matchup. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.